Lecture 8, Temptation, Struggle, and Choice. The Space Trilogy 2.
In the previous lecture, we explored Lewis's descriptions of the physical, moral, and political state of the innocent worlds of Malakandra and Paralandra. In this lecture, we shall watch as Lewis reenacts the full emotional, psychological, and theological dimensions of temptation and choice as they are played out first on the unfallen world of Paralandra and then in a small corner of our fallen Earth. Now, in our last lecture, I described Paralandra for you, and I think you would agree that Lewis's lush descriptions are truly Miltonic and epic. However, I would argue that it is in his exploration of the many dimensions of temptation that he truly waxes epic. This is where Paralandra becomes an epic. Now, just as in Eden, God used the, quote, apple to test our obedience, so on Venus, Mal-El-Dil tests the obedience and trust of the king and queen by issuing a single strange command. Not to not eat a certain fruit. The command here is that although they may walk on it, they may never sleep on fixed land. They must always sleep on the floating islands. Now, as in Genesis 3, it is the woman who is tempted. It's the Eve figure who is tempted. But this time, Eve, in quotes, has a defender, Ransom, who helps to counter the arguments of the enemy. And the enemy here is Weston, who is demon-possessed. And really, Weston is Satan. There's almost no distinction as we move through the novel. Throughout the three rounds of temptation that Weston puts the queen through, she is encouraged to take her gaze off of Mal-El-Dil and put it on herself. In other words, she is tempted to focus on her own unfulfilled needs and desires. At one point, Weston tries to turn the queen into a type of woman that Lewis always said he detested. And this was a type he called the tragedy queen. What is a tragedy queen? She is a type who is always bewailing her own suffering and sacrifice, who sees herself as a martyr, a tragic pioneer. Lewis hated that, and he really used strong words. He saw it as phony and hypocritical in a way. Now, as in Screwtape Letters and The Great Divorce, I believe that Lewis shows himself here to be one of the few theological writers to understand and expound the full and exact nature of feminine as opposed to masculine sin. Lewis suggests in his works that although we sin, there are certain sins that seem more endemic to men and more endemic to women, that are more tempting. And here, Lewis, let me put it this way. Unlike misogynistic theologians, unfortunately I've got to add Augustine in there, though I love him. Unlike misogynistic theologians who falsely argue that the key female sin is carnality. They used to call women the sex. Lewis argues that the real temptation of Eve is to use pity and unselfishness as a tool for manipulation and vain egoism. Lewis showed that that was often a temptation that tempted women rather than violence or something tempting men. Now, many modern critics have accused Lewis of being misogynistic. But I would argue quite the opposite, that he's not misogynistic, but that Lewis was one of the few advocates for femininity in a distinctly unchivalrous age. He is really a knight in a certain way. And Lewis wanted to get at the essence. And let me put it this way. Most of Lewis's fans when he was writing were women. And most of the people that wrote him letters were women. And they were not just what we would call fan letters. These women wrote Lewis for advice. And he wrote back to them because they felt, I believe, that Lewis understood the difficulties of femininity in the modern world. And they wrote to him for advice. Now, Weston, what he tries to do is convince the queen that the king is stupid and sluggish and that any real initiative must come from her. Indeed, Weston said, God wants her to assert herself by sleeping on fixed land.